This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Welcome to our Thursday show. Dave Bourne will be joining us in just a little bit as he comes back from being on location. There are so many things to talk about today in our community. As usual, your weekdays here at noon, we talk about what's happening in our communities in Polk and Marion counties and Salem and Kaiser, all the initiatives, individuals, institutions and ideas that are floating around or making things happen, and also, of course, things to look out for. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for your support of Local Talk Radio. Top of the news, of course, it doesn't get much bigger than this, with Oregon losing its lawsuit against 13 rural counties and 151 local taxing districts. So 164 districts that have sued the state over the state management or mismanagement of the state forestry lands. It's been in the news. This is enormous. I mean, it's a bit confusing, honestly, people. So we're going to break it down. First question is, okay, so they were awarded $1 billion. Well, that's $1 billion of yours and my tax money, right? So that's $1 billion that the state has to come up with to give to cities and counties. And are they just shoving tax money that we're all paying into the state away from people who are not in timber producing counties to these districts? And what are they going to do with it, and where the money is going to come from? I think the bigger picture is not who gets the money, who's paying the money, and where it comes from, is that the state needs to change its forestry practices. That they claim, well, we need to balance this with recreation and clean water and habitat. But the lawsuit is exactly the point, and that they've won, that you're not balancing it. You're only prioritizing those things and not balancing it for also economically productive use. Governor Kate Brown, her spokesman, said that the verdict is not an unexpected first step, meaning losing, in what will be a lengthier legal process. And it would be premature at this point to make budget decisions based on the jury's decision. I hear the governor saying, we're not paying that, and we're going to go. I've got a whole department full of lawyers, and I'm just going to spend the taxpayers' money to fight this. And now we taxpayers are going to be fighting for, and we're going to be sending the taxes into the state just to pay for the lawyers to fight a lawsuit that they lost. We just really can't miss the magnitude of this dollar amount. I mean, $1 billion. Of course, the Student Success Act raised $1 billion per year, $2 billion per biennium for the state. And we thought that was an enormous number. Now, in one fell swoop, we're looking at a liability that the state owes to these counties and these cities for lost revenue. Tillamook County, $330 million of that is Tillamook County. And that's a $13,000 per county resident, according to the Oregonian. So, I mean, of course, that's going to divide it up. Everybody who collects taxes on that timberland, the county, other local taxing districts where the logging takes place, and that, you know, schools get the money, ports get the money, library gets the money, and so forth. Clatsop County, they opted out of this. They didn't think it was productive. They considered it a harmful and destructive lawsuit. However, they have the greatest harvest volume from state forests. They're off the county that's getting the biggest harvest from there. This money is going to go to, you know, Linn County, Marion County, of course, Tillamook, and so forth. And this is a big deal. You know, this is going to be setting us up for not just the state, but how. What then do we do with the federal lands and their management? Now, this intersects with one of the things that I call the liberal dilemma. And there's a lot of examples of this where you have people who are on the far left side of the political spectrum, and they're the people that represent something, but it conflicts glaringly with something else that they also that they also stand behind. And here it is. We want to stop the logging, don't cut down a tree, but then it burns up. So then you release the carbon. People who log, when we log in the state, that forest products create economic development, so on and so forth. But all the carbon in those trees is sequestered if we build buildings with it. If we build the barn in your backyard, if we build your house, we build homes, we repair homes, the carbon's not released to the atmosphere. So that's a good thing. So if the same side of the political spectrum says we can't be releasing any carbon, however, they're releasing enough carbon with forest fires that we cannot prevent because we cannot adequately manage the land. It's exhausting.
And it goes beyond that. I mean, they stopped them from logging after a forest fire and clearing out the debris, which is ridiculous to me.
They want nature to take its course, but they forget that in the large spans of time, nature's way of taking its course is to burn down half a continent, right? And then just let it build as it may. So what we're losing is an opportunity to reduce the amount of forest fires. We had a statistic, we had a guest on from Healthy Forests, Healthy Communities. He said 1 year there were enough fires and devastation and carbon released from forest fires that equated to every vehicle in Oregon and Washington combined. And they're just going to let it burn up. So that's the argument in public policy, folks. We have to manage. We have to manage the forest, not just say, well, you know, we have to prioritize. And it's a, we want you to balance it. But when we have a situation, we talked about it with Commissioner Cameron a week or so ago when he was in, when you propose harvesting at 85% of certifiably renewable, right, certifiably sustainable, I should say, and they just propose, hey, let's do less than what's certifiably sustainable. Let's just do maybe 85% of it, and the legislature won't have any part of it. That's a problem. That's a problem, Peaks. And we have this problem in Polk County. You really think that they had to do that, go out and beg the voters for money if they were getting the timber dollars? You're wondering why, you know? Where's this? Why pay the counties? Well, those taxpayers in Polk County now have to dig out of their pocket and pay higher property taxes because they don't have the timber revenue. And you get into Jackson County, you get into some of the counties in southern Oregon, and they don't even have any sheriffs patrolling around at times. That's the cost that they're paying. And that's the cost, and that's the situation where they're not getting any. They're not getting any help from the governor. They're not getting help from the state. They're not being heard about how drastic it is, so they have to go to the courts. So if you haven't read the article, it stems from a 1941 Forest Acquisition Act. There were forestry lands that had been logged and not replanted. There were some that had been burned, and then they fell to the county ownership because the people that logged them didn't pay their county taxes. So now the lands are owned by the county. The county swapped them and gave them to the state in exchange for this deal. So the deal, both sides agree, said that they needed to manage it for the greatest permanent value. And that's the argument in the court. What does greatest permanent value mean? So the state thinks it means watershed protection, wildlife, recreation, grazing, other uses that the agreement didn't specifically say maximizing harvests for county revenues. Didn't specifically say that. Apparently there was enough evidence in the record, however, to document that it is what it meant. And I don't know. I don't want them to clear-cut the state forests. I want them to manage it. And if there's 3 billion board feet, as they say there has been over the period of time, these last 20 years, that could have been harvested sustainably, well, you're going to have a hard time convincing anybody that you are balancing it. What you're doing is not prioritizing it because you get more political pressure from the left on habitat and trout and, you know, forestry and irrigation and recreation and don't cut them down. You get a lot more political pressure, as we know here in Oregon, and not so much pressure to cut some down or manage it or prioritize the revenue. Last thing on this is that the governor recently this year, we're talking about it, how she basically said Oregon's economy is not driven by rural Oregon's economy. Those days have passed. Of course they passed. You guys took away their ability to make a living. Could very well be an enormous economic sector, but it's been devastated in the last 20 or 30 years. So, yeah, they passed because you took it away. But doesn't mean it could not be again. And certainly that attitude about rural Oregon, that attitude about our natural resources, attitude about anything that's not high tech in the Portland metro area, is exactly why we need a different representative in the governor's mansion. My name is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne will be joining us here on Newsmakers. Stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart talking about things happening in our community. And I got to give a shout out to the YMCA. They have started tearing down the old structure and their bid for their new and improved YMCA. Great project. We've been talking in recent weeks about the groundbreaking for the Union Gospel Mission is underway. Thus, they continue to try to finish up their fundraising. YMCA's building down. Coming down is a great visual sign of a renewal in that segment of downtown. And, of course, everybody's talking about the gigantic crane there across from the Ladd and Bush branch of U.S. Bank. They're on Commercial Street. That's building the apartment buildings for the – I don't know how to call those. They're like mini apartments, workforce apartments, micro apartments. They're tiny.
Tiny homes.
Tiny homes in the course of an apartments, but designed for downtown living, and it'd be exciting to have that new development code in place. But the YMCA, way to go. Continue the fundraising, continue to support them, and it'll be nice to see that new facility up before too long. All right, right back to state politics a little bit, because in the news is, of course, the Secretary of State. We're all still already looking into May and what's going to happen in May, not just in the presidential primary and all of those kooky Democrats that are running and trying to knock each other off the podium. But there's actually a couple of Republicans running against Trump as well. But anyway, here locally, there's a Secretary of State's position that's going to be open with no incumbent. So, as you're aware, if you're a regular Newsmaker audience, that Dennis Richardson held the post, passed away, unfortunately, and Bev Clarno is now our acting Secretary of State. She's a Republican. However, she is not running for the seat. So now there's a bunch of Democrats filing to run. No Republicans yet. That's a little disconcerting. And I hope that the Republicans are lining up a candidate, a strong candidate, because prior to Dennis Richardson, there had not been a Republican Secretary of State since, I believe, 1985. So it's an important role. I liked what Dennis Richardson was doing. I like it when they favor the public over the politics. I like it when they favor the citizen over the lawmaker or the political career. I'm not real thrilled about Bev Clarno. It seems like she is turning away most every initiative process that comes for one reason or another. It's the signatures. It's the they're hiding behind like this is, oh, this has to do with two subjects instead of one. And initiatives that are coming from the left and the right make it appear at least as if the Secretary of State is not favorable towards the initiative process for citizens. And you know what? When our legislature doesn't do the work, or we don't like the work they're doing, or they're not prioritizing what we want them to, that is our recourse. I know not everyone's a fan. Certainly it has been fraught with some missteps in the past, but personally, I'm a fan. And when the state has the ability for citizens to say, I have an idea, I'm putting it on paper, I'm going to get enough people who agree with me to sign it so we can put it on the ballot. If we can't get the legislators to vote for it, that's our option. So I like it. All right, let's talk about who's filing, because we have no Republican files. We've got Democrats. Representative Jennifer Williamson. She's from Portland area, because That's really what we need is more Portland-centric elected officials, right? Senator Mark Haas of Beaverton, Cameron Smith. He was the director of the State Department of Consumer and Business Services. And McLeod, is that how you pronounce it? McLeod Skinner. He mounted an unsuccessful attempt to unseat Congressman Greg Walden last year. So Jamie McLeod, natural resource attorney, is seeking the site. And her quote is, it's really the most important statewide office for making sure that the government functions well, and it also helps to establish accountability and really building that public trust. I agree. I liked when Richardson was auditing, finding ways in just about every department for them to save and more efficiently spend the taxpayer dollars, find duplication of services and all those things, that he was doing a great job there. And then, of course, this is a role that some have proposed should be nonpartisan, that should be helping Oregon assure that Oregon has fair and balanced elections, free, fair, balanced elections. So that doesn't mean, it's always scary when you have a Democrat or even a Republican in a position like that, and can they do things that favor one party over the other? And hopefully not. So Williamson, she calls herself a proven progressive. Proven progressive. I don't know that I need a progressive in the Secretary of State's office. It's a functionary position. I want it to be functionary. Smith describes as the fresh voice. He claims that he's the only candidate with executive experience because he's managed two state agencies. And you know what? I'll take somebody over some management experience over someone who has none. So Haas is saying that he thinks that the department needs an overhaul, that because they've had four secretaries of state in the last 4 years. As you might recall, our current governor was the Secretary of State and was elevated to the governor's position when John Kitzhaber resigned. So she took over, and then the election took place, and Dennis Richardson took place and got his election, and then he passed away, and now we have Beg Clarno. Does it concern you? It concerns me a little bit that there's no Republicans filing. All these people are trying to get a head start. Maybe they'll exhaust their own campaign coffers trying to win their primary. And maybe we just need that one great Republican candidate to be a foil to the other side. But given the fact that we had not won, and by we, I mean the Republican Party had not won a statewide election for a long time, Dennis Richardson, he was the anomaly. It helped that the Democrats ran somebody that nobody really liked, that it was pretty much a very unlikable individual. That helped. But kudos to Richardson for breaking that run. So what's different in Oregon and the Secretary of State that's really important is it is in a succession to the governorship. California has a lieutenant governor. They're in succession to the governorship. In Oregon, it's the Secretary of State. So we could look at it as a functionary position, but this gets in the way. Our structure gets in the way of making this more functionary, less partisan, because you're going to have a party position, because if the governor's a Democrat, they're going to want somebody's succession to be the governor to be of the same party, right? So really important. We're going to have to watch this and watch and see who's running. And it is a factor, folks, in elections. How fast do you need to spend down your fundraising, all their campaign coffers, to win the primary? And that's a big deal. And it's a political ploy that occurs in the initiative process. The initiative process has been used to drain, shall we say, the political opponent's coffers, because they'll throw this on the ballot and then they have to run a campaign against it. And when they run a campaign against it, they have less campaign money to donate to candidates that they like. Right? Does that make sense, Hunter?
Yeah, it's all a positioning, and it's a game of chess out there.
Yeah. So if you have a lot of people running for the Democratic primary, and nobody drops out too early, then they're all going to have to spend a lot of money to win that Democratic primary, which gives them less money to win the general election and have a summertime campaign for the November against the eventual Republican nominee. We were talking, Dave Bourne and I were arguing on air a week or so ago about whether or not our primaries should be open. My position is I get the argument, but I just don't agree with it.
Well, mine was always funny. My grandfather in the Seattle area used to love the open primaries in Washington State because he was a lifelong Democrat, and his greatest thrill was in the primaries. He would vote for the Republican he thinks would be the easiest to beat, and he bragged about it and enjoyed sharing that with everyone that would listen.
That's so interesting. And the California model, where they are taking the top two vote getters, which they always end up, and then you end up in a general election, you get to vote for one of two Democrats.
Yeah, and that's tricky. I'd prefer that more so than an open open primary election, I think.
So my take is that these are clubs. These are membership organizations. And nobody from the outside of a membership organization should be able to tell them how to select their leadership. So I'm all right if the Independent Party, the Progressive Party, Green Party, Democrats, Republicans, I'm all right with them saying, this is how we're going to elect them, and we're going to open it up to anybody who wants to vote in our primary. Fine with that, because they are deciding, their membership club is deciding who they're going to let vote.
Yeah, there's not a union out there that will let just the general public vote for their union leadership, is there?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good example. I should have given that one to Dave when we were on the air. So, I think there's parties. I think the Democratic Party in Oregon is even considering opening up their primary. That's fine with me. It's their club. It's their club. Let them decide, you know, how they determine who are their representatives and who are their leaders. Last thing before we get to break, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about people who are just get in their own way. Just get in their own way. It's driving me crazy, so I'm going to share it with you. But real quickly, if you catch an article in the Statesman Journal about our Representative Schrader going to bat for minor league baseball in the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes. There is a move by Major League Baseball to eliminate a lot of minor league teams, which might include the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes. And lest we forget, baseball, and I think the NFL as well, correct me if I'm wrong, they operate on an exemption to antitrust laws, and that's why Congress has a say in some of their business operations. But Major League Baseball wants to lower the amount of development costs and how many cities and how many teams that they have in the minor league system, and that would involve cutting of dozens of teams in their systems, including potentially the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes. So Representative Schrader, go join the fight. Go join the fight. Glad you're there. Keep up the good work. My name is Brent DeHart, and with Hunter, maybe we'll get Dave back before the time's up, but let's talk about people who can't get out of their own way on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Rich Kansky, and this segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Appreciate you being with us. I just wanted to wrap up one more comment on the Secretary of State and the candidates running. Jennifer Williamson is quoted in this article. We talked about how she casts herself as a proven progressive, and I will cast doubt on whether or not we need a proven progressive is really the right role for a Secretary of State. Deep down near the end of the article, there's comments about how she is interested in expanding access to the ballot and wants to have the state agencies, besides the DMV, register voters, provide for Election Day voter registration, and provide more election materials in languages other than English. Okay, look, I value the right to vote as much as anyone. I think that should be free. I think it should be easy. But it should also have controls such that only people who are eligible to vote should vote. And when you say things like that, people think that you're some sort of xenophobic hater or something. But same-day registration calls, that's just screaming for some fraud. right? That's just asking for it, especially if you're not going to ask for an ID and documentation that you're eligible to vote. And I just don't think it's a big task for all of us to be required to find a way to register ourselves to vote and to do our civic duty. And I thought you had to be, I guess you don't have to be proficient in English to be a citizen. You have to be proficient in English to become a citizen and a naturalized citizen to vote. So election, more election materials and languages other than English. Well, I certainly want them to understand it. So,
well, it's like the driving test. We want to give you the driving test in as many languages as possible. And I'm sitting there going, I want to know that the person driving in the car next to me can read the street signs mm-hmm. as they're going down the road. So let's not worry about making it more easy to get a driver's license. Make it worry about safety.
Yeah, I'd love to have conversation with Representative Williamson. It's her quote, Oregonians deserve a Secretary of State, a strong Secretary of State with a proven record of fighting for fairness and systems for everyone. It means fighting for policies that ensure our elections are clean and fair, removing barriers so that all eligible voters, thank you for saying eligible, have access to the ballot. I just don't think the barriers exist. I mean, I don't know how much easier it could make it. You get your driver's license, you can register to vote. You can, I mean, there's just no barriers to voting. It doesn't cost anything. They even passed the funding so that people could turn in the ballot without a stamp.
Barriers are that word alone is such a excuse. If things don't go our way, it's because of barriers. You're stopping the people that actually support it when the people that support might not be there.
All right. So as I was talking before the break, people that get in their own way, people that cannot get out of their own way. In the news, we're going to talk about sports, folks. Colin Kaepernick. Here's my take on Colin. It's a little bit different. I listened to some sports talking heads. I watch my share of ESPN and people talking about it. And I see articles about this is about NFL saving their bottom line. It's all about money. And they don't want him because it might hurt their money and their funding, or they might make people mad. Hello? Yes, you say that like it's a conspiracy. Hello, he's applying for a job. Colin Kaepernick, and we'll get to Antonio Brown in a second. Okay, nobody wants to hire you. It's not because you can't play quarterback, although some people don't think you can. You're certainly better than some of the backups we see out there in the 32 teams, right? That's not the point. The point is he cannot get out of his own way. People, he's made, what was he making, $20 million a year? Probably $20+ million a year. He went to the Super Bowl. The next year he went to the NFC Championship game. And he decided that the workplace was where he was going to exercise his right to demonstrate and protest. The workplace. That's how I look at it, folks, because I've been a business owner. Nobody comes into my workplace where we're serving the public and there's customers there and starts to make people mad. They don't get to work for me. I completely view this not as a free speech thing, but as an employee who is acting up in the workplace. There's no conspiracy. This is the first thing I would say. I would, if I had no involvement in this and I'm the GM of the Jets or the Cardinals or whatever, I'd call the press conference and I'm like, hey, nobody needs to collude with me for me to not want to hire Colin Kaepernick. He's bad for business and I'm running a business. End of discussion. Any questions? Well, I don't want anybody picketing outside the stadium. I don't want half the fans and half of the players on the team. Colin cannot figure out that he's applying for a job to work collaboratively with 50 other guys, half of which don't like what he did, right? So you're not a member of a team. You're standing up there in your self-righteous pedestal, and you say, I want you to hire me on my terms. Anybody listening who owns a business comes in, do you ever go in and for a job interview and say, hey, I want you to hire me, but only on my terms. I get to do this in the workplace. I get to do that in the workplace. And that's no quarterback's that good.
Yeah, their quarterback's 10 times better than he is. That if Tom Brady walked in and said, I want you to hire me and I'm going to do this however I want, they're going to say, see you later. It doesn't matter who you are.
I can imagine Tom Brady saying, on my uniform, I want a message that says it's anti-death penalty. I want a message that says pro-abortion. I want a message that is support Hong Kong because we don't have any lessons from the NBA, right? Kaepernick cannot get out of his own way. So I saw an article, oddly enough, the article seemed like the author was trying to make a case that this is the NFL's fault and make them look in a bad light, but I think he did the opposite. Kaepernick went in and said, well, thanks for the opportunity to showcase my talents, but it's not on my terms, so I'm going to drive down the street. He went from 25 NFL franchises coming to watch him on an NFL workout to 8 because he said, no, I want my own camera crew. I want my own coach. I want my own receivers. I want my own rights. Da, 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 da. And I mean, talk about can't get out of his. Then he's going to complain that nobody hires him. He just told everybody that he cannot be an employee. That's my take, folks. He can't get out of his own way. The only reason you have a voice, Colin, is because you play football. So don't throw football down the toilet. He could have been an NFL quarterback all of this time if he had kept his social justice warrior outside the workforce. Nobody really would have cared, right? He could have held rallies. He could have held speeches. He could have launched nonprofits. He could have done a lot of things. But when you don't get to tell your employer under which conditions that you get to go to work. Nobody does. So Antonio Brown is the same thing. Now, did you see the statement, Hunter? So it was clearly not written by Antonio Brown because he's never been that eloquent a day in his life. It was the right message. Gee, Patriots, I'm really sorry. Didn't mean to hurt your feelings. Can I come back and play? Well, you haven't shown that you can put Antonio Brown on the sidelines and make the best interests of the teammates and the team and the company that's writing the millions and millions of dollars of payroll checks and put their interests first. It's all about Antonio Brown. I talked about this with Dave.
Yeah, that's the biggest challenge with so many of these guys. It's they want. If you don't give it to them, you're the bad guy for not providing it. And then you always kind of get that take a step back and let my agent write my apology letter, and now all should be forgiven, right?
He had a Twitter, Antonio Brown had a Twitter rant that he had to take down right away, and it was full of F-bombs and F the NFL and F the Patriots and how they're making money off the backs of black people. And, you know, it's kind of like, seriously? You sexually assaulting somebody else and being in trouble for it has nothing to do with the color of your skin, folks. Come on, Antonio. You're going to blame the NFL like there's some... I mean, and Kaepernick's kind of playing the same card. Didn't they have, like, Kunta Kinte on his shirt or something as working out?
Yeah, he changed the location 30 minutes before the scheduled workout, and anyone that actually knows how it works would recognize that this whole new location had to have been planned out days in advance to make it happen. Somebody had to be there to open the doors and provide the equipment and things like that. So he shows up in a Kunta Kinte shirt, you know, yet another political statement. And now he's got the media he wants following him around with cameras. What he didn't want is the NFL controlling what comes out of that. Out of that workout, he wanted wide open media he knows supports him and made a big deal about what he was doing, because these kneeling protests, they continue to this day, but you don't see it presented in the media because they don't have that poster boy of Colin Kaepernick to show every Sunday.
He won't get out of his own way, and he'll never work in the NFL. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out, come on, people. Every single person listening to my voice right now, can you go make your workplace your political standing point? Can you go make protest in your workplace on hot button social issues? Can you do that? No, none of us can. It's not a conspiracy, folks. They don't want to hire you. We don't care if you're a good quarterback. They don't want to hire you. It doesn't take a conspiracy, and somebody should just stand up and say that. All right, we got to take a break because, you know, we're going to bring in Sergeant Mike. It's Thursday. We like to talk to Sergeant Mike on Thursdays. Maybe he'll help me rant a little bit. Antonio Brown, actually, I, as much as I have distaste in this whole impeachment proceedings, which is ridiculous, and maybe Sergeant Mike wants to talk about that, but President Trump, he needed to get out of his own way. I mean, I can't believe after all that folly for 3 years talking about who's interfering with who, the who, out what countries outside the U.S. and elections, It just seems like he fell right into what makes them so riled up. And why did he have to do that? Come on. President, get out of your own way. Colin Kaepernick, get out of your own way. Humble yourself and say, gee, I just like to make about football. I just like to make it about football. No one's paying you $20 million to talk about social justice. This is my name is Brent DeHart. We'll be right back. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne missed out today. He's coming just heading back to the studio from being on remote out in Silverton. So thanks for being here for my diatribe, the last segment. Now we want to join us Michael Frith, owner of KYKN, Sergeant Mike to his friends and admirers, and let him get in on his soapbox a little bit.
Let's make a demand or two here while we've got him on the air. We can do our Kaepernick impression right now.
I'm going to get picket ears right outside the studios here, and then you're going to fire me, and then I'm going to say it's so unfair and half the nation should feel sorry for me. All right, Michael, welcome. Nice to have you join us.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So you've got something on your mind. You're telling me during the break. It involves the Salvation Army.
Yeah, you know, they took a big hit this week when it was stated that Chick-fil-A wasn't going to send donations this year or next year to the Salvation Army or Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And the gay community got that, twisted it, and said it's because that Chick-fil-A doesn't want to deal with anti-gay companies, and that Salvation Army is a bad organization that discriminates against gays.
Who says that they do?
Yeah. So I went and looked it up.
Oh, good.
Yeah. The Salvation Army has a specific, very deep plan that they operate throughout the world specifically for the gay community. I'm talking about food, medicine, counseling, all the above. A lot of those folks they're sleeping on the streets, and they go bring them in, and they don't say, you know, hey, could you tell me about your sexual orientation before we bring you in? By the way, here's some soup and dinner and a bed. But before, we have to talk about your sexual orientation. They go out of their way not to.
So, and, Michael, Chick-fil-A is fairly well documented, you know, having Christian ownership, right?
Yep.
It seems like there's a move to brand anything that has a religious background or a faith-based background as being anti-gay. And so how did this happen, this disconnect in terms of the Salvation Army?
Well, when the community found out they weren't going to donate X dollars this year to those two particular places, there are other things they're not donating to this year either. They have a budget, and that's how aware, intensely aware, the leaders in the gay community are to look for every little jot and tittle that they can expand their agenda on. And it's a flamethrower every time. I'd like to say something about part of what the Salvation Army does, okay?
Please.
Okay. They're called anti-gay, and actually they're just the opposite. They have a program for all the, whatever that acronym is, including transgender, where they provide many things that in a very sensitive way to people in that community to help them. But on their doing the most good is their motto. And I just want to, from their website, and their website is SalvationArmyUSA.org, SalvationArmyUSA.org. you can see exactly these activities that they participate in every year. They help disaster survivors, brighten the holidays. They provide shelter. They cure hunger. They share God's love. They combat addiction, overcome poverty, meet the greatest need, assist the unemployed, equip families, fight human trafficking, serve the veterans, teach children school, stop domestic abuse, serve the LGBTQ community, and love the elderly.
Well, that sounds horrible. That sounds like a bunch of hate-filled morons right there.
Yes.
What? They're supposed to help the homeless and feed the hungry and help families and LGBTQ and...
I heard love the elderly, too.
Yeah.
And the veterans. Those are horrible things. So we better protest that.
Yeah. I'm in on two of those deals. And I'm the elderly veteran.
And lest we forget, of course, we always say the Kroc Center, although it is a mission of the Salvation Army and the Kroc Center and what that means to our community and how that was created by a grant from the Kroc Foundation. That's why it's the nickname, really. It's not the full name.
Yeah.
But the Salvation Army's center, and it was Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, wife's legacy to give $1 billion or so to the Salvation Army. Yeah, great work. You know, it does rile me up, Sergeant Mike, when people want to equate anybody with a faith background, and I'll take it back, it's almost always against a Christian.
Yeah.
And equate them, and they're bigots, and they must be exposed. And we see it here in town with the discrimination attempts against the Salem Alliance Church. But we see it when, you know, media stars like the Gaines couple, Chip and Joanna Gaines, on Home and Garden or whatever network. And they wanted to make a controversy because they belong to this Christian church. And the Christian church preaches that God doesn't like gays or whatever. And it's like, there are a lot of people in America, you're going to shout us all down until we no longer have faith?
Yeah.
And when it comes to preaching, I'm sorry it's your segment, but it comes to preaching about we need to discriminate against people of faith. That's drawing the line. I mean, we have enough countries in the world where faith is outlawed.
And look at them.
Yeah.
They're not pleasant places. And I just want to stand up today for the Salvation Army, and I think they're really cool. They do a wonderful job, just like Union Gospel Mission does, and a number of other faith-based organizations that live to help the community.
Lest anyone forget, the Old Testament is the foundational document for faith traditions for the religions of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. So, yeah, keep that in mind. We're deciding that anybody who has a faith-based background has this foundational book. It doesn't mean they hate anyone, right? Welcoming doors at the Salvation Army. Welcoming doors to all. Thank you, Sergeant Mike. Thanks for being here at Newsmakers, everyone. We're going to do it again tomorrow. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.